Good morning and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. On the program this week, please welcome Dr. Philip Hanna, Professor of Neurology at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and Director of the Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, JFK Neuroscience at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. How are you, John?
Good. Thanks for joining us this week. And we're going to focus on, based on your specialty, Parkinson's today and related disorders this week. So let's start with Parkinson's. What exactly is Parkinson's for those who may not be familiar, and how does it work?
All right. Parkinson's disease, it's a chronic, in other words, longstanding, what we call progressive neurodegenerative condition. So progressive means symptoms increase and accumulate over time,
mm-hmm.
and it relates to a brain functioning issue. The condition was first described by James Parkinson over 200 years ago. He wrote a nice essay describing the symptoms. It's estimated around a million or so individuals in the U.S. have Parkinson's disease, and it's estimated about maybe 60,000 individuals get diagnosed every year or so. And the main symptoms, as far as motor symptoms, include slowness of movement, what we call bradykinesia, rigidity or stiffness, and a certain type of characteristic tremor. When you're resting, you have a tremor,
mm-hmm.
typically in one arm, for example.
And are there different types of variants?
Yes, there's what's called the more classic one is a tremor-dominant Parkinson's, where people have mainly tremor, and it affects primarily one side of the body, but over time it can affect the other side. And then there's variants of what we call Parkinson plus syndromes. There's something called multiple system atrophy, where people can have a lot of blood pressure fluctuation, drops in pressure, where you can faint a bit. Another condition that Dudley Moore had called progressive supranuclear palsy, where you have trouble with your eye movements, more tendency to fall. There's a condition called Lewy body dementia, or dementia with Lewy bodies, where there's more dementia as a feature and hallucination. And then there are other things that can cause symptoms of Parkinson's, certain medications, for example, certain toxins like manganese minors, or even infection related to HIV, or in the past there was a big pandemic virus which caused Parkinsonism, over 50 years ago, which led to the movie Awakenings, where they found some treatment and started looking into treatment for Parkinson's, and even due to some strokes in certain individuals.
You mentioned the movie. How is that everything that happened there, is that truly possible?
Yes, that was the one with.
With Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah, and so he got the medication, and he was basically cured, or he appeared to be, and then some side effects from the medication, kind of, it didn't go well after that. Now, can a patient be cured as Robert De Niro was without the side effects? Have you seen that?
As of yet, we don't have a cure for Parkinson's, but there are increasing treatments,
mm-hmm.
ways to help replace the dopamine that's deficient or stimulate dopamine targets. So we have increasing treatments for the symptoms, but not a cure as of yet.
Okay, you mentioned treatment. So what are some of the treatments that that are available that you offer there at JFK?
So the main treatments are, there's the pharmacological or the medication, and then there are treatments that are not medication-wise. Most of the medications try to either, for example, replace dopamine, such as what's called levodopa. It's still the main treatment, the gold standard treatment. Then there are things called dopamine agonists, which are manufactured, but they stimulate the dopamine target in the brain. to the person, basically as if they're getting dopamine. And there's other medications that affect dopamine in different ways. They're looking at, you know, other targets other than dopamine. For example, there's a medication that targets a different neurotransmitter, for example. But then there are a lot of treatments that are not medication-related, such as rehab, physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, which are very important. And then you have some surgical treatments, such as deep brain stimulation, or more recently there's introduction of focused beam ultrasound for mainly targeting tremor.
I see. So what are some of the surgical options that you mentioned?
Well, historically, going back some decades, they had lesioning techniques. Lesioning meaning you're making basically a permanent lesion in the brain in certain target areas of what's called the basal ganglia. So in the basal ganglia in the brain, you have nuclei that are important in coordination and planning and are involved in, say, Parkinson's disease. But over time, what's been mainly used is deep brain stimulation. So it's a pacemaker-type device close to the clavicle with wires that are tunneled under the skin. They go into your brain, and these can be programmed to improve the symptoms of Parkinson's, for example, such as tremor, certain involuntary movements, and it also helps the slowness and stiffness.
No, it helps the symptoms. Is there anything that you've seen that fully eliminates them in any patients?
Typically, it's difficult to fully eliminate them.
Mm-hmm.
Patients that have had deep brain stimulation, for example, we can often reduce their medication, say, by 70%. There are a subset that are able to come off medication completely, but we don't, you know, promise that to individuals.
Right.
But it can notably dramatically reduce medication you take, and thereby helping reduce the side effects that they may develop or have had from the medication.
And does Parkinson's, does the severity of it increase in a person as they get older?
Yes, generally it does increase. Like I said, oftentimes it may start on one side mm-hmm. and remain mainly on that side, but it does begin to typically go to the other side.
Oh, I see. Now, when you said that, I thought you meant it went from one side to the other. So it could start with like one side of the body and then just the whole body can be affected by it.
Yes, but it tends to remain worse on the initial side that was affected.
Right. So what are some of the conditions, like other conditions that are related to Parkinson's?
There's these that multiple system atrophy where you can have, you know, fainting spells or difficulty with the what's called the autonomic nervous system. The progressive supranuclear palsy is eye movement difficulty, and worse, more balance. Some that have more dementia. If an individual has more of the classic tremor type of Parkinson's,
mm-hmm.
we, you know, tell individuals that's kind of a better form as it's much more slowly progressive. Oftentimes, memory is not that affected or the balance until later stages. But it's important to see a movement disorder specialist to rule out other things, such as, strokes, or they may have had some infection in the past, for example, or hydrocephalus, where you have too much fluid collection in the brain, that kind of thing.
Okay. And who does it affect the most? Is there a certain type of person that you find is more prevalent, Parkinson's is more prevalent to affect?
It's somewhat more common in men. The average age of onset or age of diagnosis is around 60, 61. It's estimated up to 10% are young onset, where you might have symptoms even before age 40. But below age 30 or so is rare, but it does occur.
You've seen that.
Yes.
Yeah. Talking with Dr. Philip Hanna, professor of neurology at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and director of the Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorder Center, JFK Neuroscience at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. When someone, how does someone get to your office? In other words, if I feel like I have a symptom, is that when I would come to you? Or is it maybe, does it usually happen when I go to my primary doctor and they see something and they recommend I visit you? How do they normally get to you?
More commonly, it does come through their primary physician who refers, or honestly, many individuals I see have been seeing a neurologist and who refer them for further evaluation and treatment. Or, and sometimes the patients or their families are concerned and they basically refer themselves in a way, or through other types of physicians.
So when someone ends up, they come into your office, they're sitting down with you. Let's say, how does that start? How does the interaction begin when there's a possibility of them having Parkinson's? They don't know yet. What's the process that they go through once they get to you?
There are a lot of questions we ask, as you can imagine, various symptoms and their scales that we use. Incorporate both questions about symptoms they may have and, for example, activities of daily living. Do they have any trouble with slowness, movement, dressing, you know, feeding themselves, activities of daily hygiene? Do they have a tremor? Have their family noticed? Sometimes it's more the family that notices, for example, decreased facial expression. You know, mm-hmm. Do they have loss of that kind of facial expression, or more a change in posture and shuffling? So there are a lot of questions, including questionnaires and scales. And then we do a full neurological examination, as well as specifically looking for the characteristics, slowness, tremor, and stiffness.
You mentioned the face, and I'm thinking of drooping like Bell's palsy. Are the two related in any way?
No, they're distinct entities. Okay. And they don't truly have facial weakness. It's more just less smiling, for example, looks more flat. We call it like a mask disease, like you're wearing a mask almost.
I see.
So less movement, but it's not a paralysis or weakness as such.
Okay. You have a lot of other specialists there that you work with at JFK. Who are some of the other specialists that you would collaborate with to treat Parkinson's?
Correct. The good thing is at a center like this, we have subspecialists in almost every field of neurology, or really in every field, including stroke, epilepsy, sleep specialists, neuro-ophthalmologists, multiple specialists in multiple sclerosis, tumors, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I mainly collaborate because of the overlapping conditions with sleep specialists, for example. Because patients with Parkinson's often have excess daytime drowsiness. Another, I should mention, interesting feature, sleep-related, is something called REM sleep disorder, where patients often have vivid dreams and they act out the dream. So they might dream that somebody is chasing them and they may fall out of bed, you know, mm-hmm. or dream that they're punching somebody and actually, you know, may punch at their sleep partner without knowing it. People with that condition have a high risk of developing Parkinson's years down the road. So it's important to rule out some of these things. So I collaborate with a sleep specialist and an ophthalmologist in particular. A lot of times there's overlap with some of the stroke specialists in certain cases.
Now, you say when you act out dreams, that could be a sign of Parkinson's in the future. Is sleepwalking related to that? Is that, or is that totally different? You mentioned the punching, but is walking, could that be a sign of Parkinson's, a possibility in one's future?
Yeah, that's a little bit different. People have what's called parasomnia, movements during sleep. Honestly, I'm not sure the relation of sleepwalking to Parkinson's.
Okay, so it's
related to this.
All right, it's a little different then. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your wellness rehab program there at JFK.
Yeah, so we're very excited about this new program. It's been running for a couple of years at different stages. It's been a little bit difficult through the pandemic, to be honest, but now things are opening up quite a bit. So the program is designed for individuals who are having difficulty at home, especially with, say, gait and balance and falling, the risk of fall. And it's been difficult to get them optimally managed with their medication, seeing them in the clinic only. Mm-hmm. You know, when I see somebody in clinic, it's a one-time, you see them at individual time periods, but you don't get a full sense of how they manage 24/7 at home. So the idea is that they come into the rehab part of the hospital. So they're admitted under rehab for a couple of weeks. They get intensive physical therapy, speech, occupational therapy, various other therapies, and we can adjust their medicines under supervised conditions. So it's a very nice way to see if we change medication, what happens mm-hmm. to them in terms of their exam, their functioning, and all these different specialists give their input and weigh in as to the outcome of these different changes in therapy itself.
So it's like a trial and error, so you can get to the so they can live their best life with whatever they need to treat their Parkinson's.
Yes.
Okay.
Hopefully, it's as you say, trial and error based on some scientific rationale.
Well, of course, yes. I didn't mean to imply that you're just throwing stuff out there. I mean, you have a regimen. You have a process that you follow based on your experience and your education. I get that. Sure. So what other movement disorders do you treat? We mentioned we're going to focus on Parkinson's, but there are other disorders. I know you touched on a couple of them earlier.
Right. Some of the main other ones include a different tremor condition called essential tremor, which is more of a hereditary tremor where you have the shaking when you're doing things. In Parkinson's, it's more typically when you're resting and the arm is at rest. Essential tremor, you're like when you're eating, drinking, writing, things like that, it can have voice tremor. You see conditions called dystonia, characterized more by involuntary posturing or twisting movements, can affect different parts of the body. Things like Tourette's syndrome, we have tics, different kind of movement disorders. Something called myoclonus. There's chorea with more involuntary dance-like movements, such as Huntington's chorea. So things of that nature, different forms of imbalance. So mainly things characterized by abnormal movements or difficulty with movements.
Right. So you said essential tremors. That's similar to Parkinson's in the movement, except it's only when you're doing something. So when we see, and I have, family members who do this, they don't have any tremors, but when they pick up a cup of coffee, you know, it's like my mother. She'll be shaking a little bit. Is that something you should get treatment for right away, or is that something that's just common in the elderly?
Well, things like, for example, essential tremor, it's not a necessity to get treated. It's more typically based on how it affects a person's daily functioning. Certainly, their quality of life can improve with treatment. But, for example, it's not similar. It's not like blood pressure, hypertension, or diabetes, where if you don't treat it, you're going to cause other problems down the road. So it's not things that have to be treated, but it's more elective, but it certainly improves quality of life and daily functioning.
I see. So I understand that you are expanding there. Can you share some of the details about the expansion?
Okay. So for many, many years, I was the only movement disorder specialist here at JFK. About 3 years back, we hired another fellowship-trained movement disorder specialist. Dr. Svetlanov, who's been an excellent addition. And recently we added a second neurosurgeon who specializes in Parkinson-type surgeries, for example. This kind of functional surgery having just come from Toronto, one of the top neurosurgical hospitals for these kind of procedures in the North America. And beyond physicians, we have an active residency program. We're up to 24 residents. So that truly increases educational opportunity, research collaboration. And we have a number of students that rotate through from Hackensack and also Robert Wood Johnson and other medical schools. So there's the research and the educational side, but also expansion of the actual number of colleagues in the movement disorder section.
Yeah, it's impressive. You have the largest, is this true, the largest residency program in the state?
Correct.
Did you say correct or not correct?
Yeah, correct.
That's correct. I sound like you said not correct.
Different fellows, what's called fellowship program.
The fellowship program. Okay. Well, how does that contribute to the education program overall?
Well, there's a lot of specialized, lectures, and we also have symposiums, for example, that we're involved in, which reach out to different caregivers, medical specialists, for example, and patients also. So there's an increasing number of educational seminars, symposiums, things of that nature. I should mention we also try to get the residents actively involved in things such as the moving day activity that's through the Parkinson's Foundation. It's once a year. That's annual, that really was started through interaction here at JFK.
Moving day.
So they're all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is moving day? What does that consist of?
So that's headed up by the Parkinson Foundation, but we're actively involved in coordinating it. So it's basically a walk, and there's a run involved. So hundreds of patients and their families show up. It's up in Clark, and it's there's other things, typically marching band and different exercises, displays, and pharmaceutical companies there also.
We're talking with Dr. Philip Hanna, professor of neurology at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and director of the Parkinson's Disease at Movement Disorder Center, JFK Neuroscience at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. For the couple minutes we have left, I did a show, I think back in December, it was definitely back in December because it was around Christmas time, with Parkinsings, the singing program.
Yeah. Right.
At JFK, yeah, they help Parkinson's patients. And it's because singing, I learned, helps maintain the muscles of speech and voice. Why is singing more effective than simply speaking?
I think some of it has to do with the melody, the prosody, kind of the fluctuation in tone. It helps stick to a certain, rhythm and flow to it. And also, they're encouraged to sing loudly and project with intent, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a lot of fun, and people feel part of a group, and that's very encouraging.
Yeah, it's great. Well, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for everything that you do there at JFK. It's an amazing program. It's an amazing school. And appreciate you taking the time. Dr. Philip Hanna, once again, is the professor of neurology at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and the director of the Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorder Center, JFK Neuroscience at JFK University Medical Center. Doctor, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Dr. Philip Hanna, if you'd like more information, you can go to jfkmc.org. If you'd like a podcast of this broadcast, you just go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz.